If you've ever listened to a song repeatedly and memorized its lyrics, if you've ever tripped over a line in a song and thought, that is exactly how I feel right now, I think you'll understand what this series is about. Hi, this is Elle from Cassettes and Chocolate Milk, and this is the first episode of a mini-series called Consequential Lyrics. This series is designed to explore the significance of those lyrical fragments that manage to take on a greater meaning and personal consequence. Aside from my own stories, I encourage you to submit your own voice recordings that describe the significance of your own consequential lyric for the final fan episode of the series. For more information, head to cassettesandchocolate.blogspot.com and follow the prompts. It should make sense that the first episode of Consequential Lyrics should be the band that holds the greatest significance to me, Queen. It was 20 years ago that I was first introduced to Greatest Hits 2, and I knew then, even as an 8-year-old, that I would never love any band more. It's difficult to describe my fascination with Queen and why Freddie and the Boys have commanded such an important role in my life. As is clear from my work on Cassettes and Chocolate Milk, a large proportion of my creative life is devoted to examining the general nature of musical fandom, breaking it down and analysing it, not to mention trying to accept it. The Queen songs I've chosen to include for this episode are not necessarily the most popular or poetic. Hardly any of them remind me of any one specific heartbreaker as much as I would want them to. However, I will say that these consequential lyrics represent pivotal moments in my relationship with Queen's music, and you'll soon see how. We'll start off with The Night Comes Down, a song penned by Brian May, which was included on Queen's self-titled debut record. As a lonely 13-year-old, I fell in love with this song, and even now, I consider it to be my favourite Queen song, along with The Prophet song from A Night at the Opera. At the time, everything about The Night Comes Down did much to encourage daydreams of a hazy London of 1972, and I would think about it a lot, wandering around Kensington Market, going to gigs at Imperial College, and having frequent afternoon naps in Hyde Park. The Night Comes Down allowed me to imagine a place I'd much rather be, among friends who were passionate, creative, and understanding. The irony of it all is that the song actually describes a rather alarming feeling of disenchantment, as well as this sense of social disconnect. Now all the world is grey to me, nobody can see.
Black and the white.
Lovers of early Queen would be more than familiar with the prevailing lyrical themes of that era, fantasy and folklore, myth and legend, not to mention an ongoing battle between goodness and evil. The thread can be identified as far back as My Fairy King, up until Lily of the Valley on Sheer Heart Attack. From Queen 2, Freddie's The Fairy Fellas Masterstroke was inspired by a painting of the same name by Victorian fine artist Richard Dadd. The painting is crowded, confusing and intricate, full of bizarre, misshapen fairies and supernatural beings hiding within an ethereal forest. Dad had painted it over a 9-year period in Bethlehem Hospital, where he had been hospitalised after murdering his father in 1843. Dad had also written a strange poem to accompany the painting, detailing the names and activities of each character featured, from Titania and Oberon from Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream to the fairy fella himself, about to split a hazelnut in two for Queen Mab's carriage. The song, much like the painting and the poem, is bizarre and breathtaking in its complexity. From the very first time I heard it, I was not only captivated by its intricacy, but I fell in love with its wonderfully arcane language that was so suggestive of another time and place. It's a thing that I'm sure many Queen fans have done, looked at the painting for things that Freddie mentioned, the squinting pedagogue who wears a frown and the satyr peering under a lady's gown. We now know that Freddie took both the band and the group's producer, Roy Thomas Baker, to the Tate in London to repeatedly view the painting that inspired him. And I suppose that's a great source of consequence to me, to imagine Freddie's fascination for that painting and how he managed to honour it so effectively. I think it would be fair to suggest that Queen's 1974 album Queen 2 is an extremely impressive work that is worthy of its own in-depth analysis. Following on from the themes I discussed earlier, it's structured to reflect that dichotomy of goodness and evil, with side A being the white side, largely made up of Brian's compositions, and side B being the black side, featuring many of Freddie's songs. Musically, it's very sophisticated, some might say overly ambitious for its time, but many Queen fans consider it to be the band's finest work. The March of the Black Queen has been described as Freddie's prequel to Bohemian Rhapsody. Much like Bohemian Rhapsody, there are many different chapters, moods and changes in time signature. There is a prevailing sense of redemption, not to mention this impression that the song is set in the very bowels of Hades. As a 14-year-old, I took great delight in reading those lyrics and trying to work out my own understanding of what was going on. I developed my own bizarre lyrical interpretations and I posted my theories online on my GeoCities page, and I received loads of responses from people who had come up with their own ideas of what Freddie could have meant. I loved that I could solicit that kind of discussion, even if my interpretations bordered on trolling. In more recent times, my understanding of the March of the Black Queen has changed considerably. I now see this evolution in Freddie's lyricism, this shift from seeing evil as a great source of guilt to something that carries far more allure. He describes characters that are heartless, slovenly, crude and promiscuous, but while an early character like Great King Rat would be repugnant, a later character like Killer Queen would be quite sexy. The consequence of the March of the Black Queen should be obvious after saying all that. My propensity to analyse pop music really began with this song, and although I will never find a soundbite where Freddie acknowledges the full extent of his lyrical intent, I appreciate how this song managed to bring out this quality in myself, to see more than was ever really intended.
Love. Everything you Rob and Joy. In each and every soul lies a man very soon to see and discover. But even till the end of his life, he'll bring a little.
As a teenager, I looked up to Freddie. I used him as an example of what it meant to be focused and passionate, disciplined and uncompromising. His early performances seduced me and he became the ultimate embodiment of confidence. It's only been in more recent times that I've noticed those rare moments of insecurity, those doubts and anxieties which contradict that flamboyant onstage persona we're all well acquainted with. I can appreciate that before Killer Queen, before she had a heart attack, there was no guarantee that it was going to work out for Queen. After all, they had been together for 4 years and their management had been screwing them over royally. And then Brian was hospitalized with hepatitis and much of Sheer Heart Attack was recorded without him. An early biography of the band by George Tremlett ends with Freddie getting vocal nodules and being so afraid that he would never sing again that he kept it from the band. It seemed like the life of Queen was hanging in the balance. Knowing what we know now, knowing about the phenomenal success that would follow, it's difficult to appreciate that anxiety that must have plagued Freddie and the boys. I now view In the Lap of the Gods Revisited in that very specific context. Lyrically, I think of it as coming from a very sore, defensive place where Freddie was made to account for the lack of funds, the lack of success, and more poetically than that, his place in the wider scheme of things. The odd thing is that In the Lap of the Gods Revisited carries this rich, anthemic quality. We know it from the conclusion of such gigs like the Rainbow Theatre in 1974. We're invited to join in with that rowdy, almost victorious refrain that manages to disguise a self-doubt that can be characterised as almost universal in nature.
It's so easy, but I can't do it. So risky, but I got a chance. So funny, there's nothing to laugh about. My money, the
that's all you want to talk about. I can see what you want me to be, but I'm no fool. Send the
You can go and set him free.
A friend of mine once described Queen's music in this particularly interesting way. She said that listening to Queen was like Dutch courage for her. Whenever she had to do anything frightening, she would put on Queen full blast, and immediately she would feel strong enough to face any challenge at hand. There are many Queen songs that possess that very quality. Much of their output is designed to inspire courage in the listener. Whether it be Don't Stop Me Now from Jazz or Don't Try So Hard from Innuendo, you can consistently identify that message. You can take on the world if you really want to. One of the earliest incarnations of Queen's encouragement songs is Spread Your Wings from News of the World. Penned by John Deacon, it details the depressing plight of daydreaming Sammy at the Emerald Bar. He's determined to leave and make a life for himself in light of his bully of a boss telling him that he'll never amount to much. The verses are bleak, but it makes the chorus all the more glorious with lines like, "Pull yourself together because you know you should do better. That's because you're a free man." Again, while Spread Your Wings is hardly the most poetic set of lyrics going around, it certainly makes us consider whether lyrical consequence can be freed from its musical context. If I consider a song like It's Late, again from News of the World, it solicits the same rush of endorphins and it functions much like an encouragement song would, in spite of not featuring that trademark message of encouragement in its lyrics. Spread Your Wings inspires both musically and lyrically. It is a perfect pop song that makes you want to escape and reassess your ambition, just like Sammy at the Emerald Bar.
keeps watching the show over and over again. Knew it was time, he'd made up his mind to leave his dead life behind. His boss said to him, boy, you'd better begin to get those crazy notions right out of your head. Sammy, who do you think that you are? You should.
There is no denying that every Queen song has a consequence. We haven't even touched upon the romantic songs, songs like You Take My Breath Away, Somebody to Love, or Save Me, which manage to sum up a wide range of relevant, wretched states. I love that it is music that is beautiful and intense. I love that it is universal and timeless, and that we can fall in love with it over and over again. There is a great satisfaction knowing that the 8-year-old Elle was right, and nothing would ever surpass this band. But what's even greater than that is finding something new in this, finding some kind of new meaning or dimension, some fresh way to make it consequential again. Skipping over many years and many great albums, I'll leave you with arguably the most moving Queen single ever released, The Show Must Go On from the 1991 album Innuendo. Many fans view material from this era with a heavy sense of grief and poignancy. During this time, Freddie's health was in decline and he would only come into the studio when he had the energy to do so. After the recording of Innuendo, he would ask Brian and Roger to give him anything to sing, whether it be demos or covers from their respective solo albums. This material would later be reworked for the posthumous 1995 album Made in Heaven. When Freddie no longer had the energy to sing, he stopped taking his life-saving medication. He died of bronchial pneumonia brought about by AIDS at his home on the 24th of November 1991. He was 45 years old. It is widely considered that the lyrics of The Show Must Go On are Brian's due to its distinctive poetic flourishings. There are some incredible lines in it. My soul is painted like the wings of butterflies. Fairy tales of yesterday will grow but never die. And whenever I've talked about the lyrics of The Show Must Go On with anyone, they've highlighted another line, another aspect of it that is so moving, so powerful and evocative. It is a song that makes us think of Freddie bravely facing the prospect of his own mortality.
Empty spaces, what are we living for? Abandoned places, I guess we know the score. On and on, does anybody know what we are looking for? Another hero, another mindless crime behind the curtain. Whatever happens, I
Thank you very much for listening to the first episode of Consequential Lyrics. I hope it's inspired you to think of the way you derive meaning from the songs you love. If you would like to read more about the project, please head along, or even headlong, to cassettesandchocolate.blogspot.com for essays, the zine, and more information about how you can contribute. For part two, we'll be talking about the Beatles, so make sure you come back shortly.